We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Another weekend of college baseball is ahead on College Sports Now. Kyle Schassberger, I'm on Twitter at Kyle Schass, and Michael Serber on Twitter at L_Serberino. We've got a top three showdown coming up in Nashville between Mississippi State and Vanderbilt. We'll touch on that series, as well as plenty of others this weekend, three up and three down. And Serbs, I got to tell you, man, I got dose one scheduled this afternoon. I've been dragging my feet on this, but I got to tell you, it's going to be a great day. I know we had a little bit of an overnight frost. I'm here with you talking college baseball. This is going to be a good show, man. I'm looking forward to where I'm at in life personally. I hope you are as well. And really where this show is as we head into week nine of college baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you really buried the lead there. The frost last night was not ideal for people who are, you know, growing gardens right now, which I'm actively trying to grow grass seed in my front yard. I don't know if that was the best thing to happen, but it looks okay. So I'm tentative. Also, today is the first day that we're mowing since we put the grass seed down. So I'm a little hesitant about that as well. I don't want to mess up all this hard work I've put in.
Well, dude, may the force be with you. I think you're going to be okay. Hopefully this is the last time we'll deal with near what? It was 30 degrees, I think, this morning, 33, 34, by the time I took my daughter to school at 7 a.m. I mean, it was not ideal here in North Carolina.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could be worse. I was talking to Michael Felder, our co-host for football and Hand in the Dirt podcast, and they had snow, real snow, in your hometown of Chicago over this past week, which is just outrageous because it's the end of April. Like, what are we doing? Hey, snow, what are we doing?
I think the good thing for those in Chicago versus a year ago, they actually got blanketed with snow. Like, you had to do some major shoveling. I don't know how much actually stuck or how worse it was in certain areas of the city and beyond in Chicagoland, but I don't think it was anything comparable to what it was last year. But nonetheless, it's April. It should not be snowing. And yes, that is a real thing in the Midwest and even in Chicago this time of year. And I haven't looked at the weather forecast for that region of the country, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if it got up to 70, 75 this weekend. That's just part of the weather patterns for that area of the country.
That's baseball weather though, baby. Let's go. I'm all, you know, if you want to dip down and cancel a midweek game that shouldn't be happening anyway, and then get in some like beautiful, you know, Chamber of Commerce afternoon days for baseball, and on the weekend, make it happen. I will sacrifice the midweek, as you know.
Speaking of midweek games, your Clemson Tigers got walked off on by Georgia. Those are the good of midweek games, though, despite the result. But it was in the bottom of the ninth inning in Athens earlier this week on Tuesday. I got a couple of bones to pick with a couple of midweek teams. Also, we'll get to that in a moment. Viewing options for the weekend. A hat tip to the Texas Tech radio broadcaster, Jeff Haxton, before we get out of here also. And I'll have a prediction. I don't know if Serbs is going to jump in the pool with me, but regarding Arkansas and South Carolina, a top 10 showdown that is getting underway on Thursday night alongside 12th-ranked Ole Miss and LSU. So a couple of top 25 teams, three to be exact, in action on Thursday to get Week 9 underway in college baseball. But Serbs, I want to start. This has been a big topic over the last couple of days, and I think you're more the soccer aficionado than I am. Please, I don't want to put you on the spot, but at least tell me or give me your best recollection of what went down with this proposed Super League, how it might apply to college sports in general, your overall thought, your feelings, your opinion of it. Because my understanding is the money-hungry soccer lords of our great world and over there in Europe are all trying to, you know, parlay or petition or under the table put together, you know, 12 of the best teams together in one league, which would have created tons of issues internationally for World Cup eligibility and otherwise. It fell through kind of at the 12th hour in a matter of days. So is that a fair assessment? And I've seen and heard a lot of comparisons to college sports and how, you know, the Power Five, this can be an example of how they might be able to secede from the union, if you will, and become their own force. So this could be the blueprint, in a way, if they're able to actually, you know, successfully pull it off.
Frankly, they already did this, right? Like, the college football playoff is what the Super League meant to be in Europe. They've boxed out the Group of Five and made it Power Five only, and frankly, SEC, ACC, Big 10, Big 12 only. Sorry, Pac-12. But, like, you just had, what, two teams in the playoff over the course of its history? So, like, the Super League is essentially what college football has already done. You know, is a power move, I guess, perhaps, by all the – or not perhaps, but it was a power move by all the big clubs in Europe. But, man, European sport is just so much different than United States sports, whether you're looking at soccer, cycling, you know, any of the Olympic sports, which are much more popular over there and financially viable. It's a whole different game. Like, you know, these soccer players, they don't like play high school ball, get recruited, go to a college for 3 years, get drafted, go to the worst team in the league, try and build them up. If it doesn't work, go in free agency. Like, mostly in soccer, what happens is you find a phenom when he's like 8 years old. You put him in your soccer academy. You stick him there for education and training until he's old enough to not do it anymore and go up to the senior side and be a star for your senior team. If you don't do that, then you pay millions upon millions upon millions, hundreds of millions of euros for the greatest players who pretty much that's how they came up. They come up through these youth academies. I guess the only, like, our comparables in the United States would be, like, our military academies that we send kids to for basketball, or, like, IMG Academy down in Florida, you know, like, those types of things. It's just so much different, the way it's put together. And I think what the Super League was trying to accomplish was to be less different, to use the model of the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NHL, you know, et cetera, to do something similar where it's like only the best of the best. No more Crystal Palace, you know, in the Premier League. Like, no, let's just put the big boys against the big boys and let's make that money. They wanted to sign a huge TV deal, clearly. They wanted all the TV money for themselves. Because I'm not, but I'm not privy to how the Champions League currently works and its payout, and these home leagues work out with their payouts. But I imagine they were just trying to make a ton of money off of a TV deal that they would have gotten via the, you know, ESPN probably would have paid up for North American rights, and then, you know, maybe Sky or whomever in the Eurosport in Europe would have paid big rights for it over there. They were just, you know. I don't think there was any. There was this whole, like, vibe of they were doing this dastardly thing, and I didn't really take that away from it. I don't know if you did.
Yeah, I wasn't, Serbs, I wasn't surprised at all by the move. I mean, we all know soccer means more outside the United States, but like the SEC inside our country as it pertains to college sports, soccer is the global sport. So it really wasn't a surprise that this was being put together behind the scenes, either knowingly or unknowingly, depending on who you talk to. And it, you know, was fast and furious this past weekend. And adaptations are already starting inside the U.S. with as serious soccer has become, and at least the pipelines to play professionally. I mean, the United States has been well behind the rest of the world, and particularly Europe, but, you know, they're doing everything they can to catch up, but not surprising to say the least. But my application, at least to the States and to college sports and to this specific podcast talking about college baseball, I couldn't help but think of Super League, huh? We kind of already have that in college baseball anyways. You mentioned the college football playoff and the way those teams are selected, and I agree with you. I don't disagree by any means, but in baseball, it's the Southeastern Conference. Now, we can maybe, and I'd like to do this quickly as an exercise, like maybe there's three or four teams we can dump out of the SEC to make the conference even more legit, if that's possible, but they're already there. We know college baseball starts and stops with the SEC. That's just the way it is. They've got the best talent. They've got the best access to the recruiting lands and the territory where you can play baseball year-round. And, you know, you look at the facilities, the finances, and what athletic departments are able to do in backing up and supporting these baseball programs. It's not a surprise that the SEC has been as strong as they are for as long as they have been, right? It is the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah. Well, let's start talking about who are the teams we're dumping, right? And where do we go to immediately? My immediate thought is go to the ACC and the Big 12 to fill these few that we're dumping. But who are we dumping from the SEC initially?
Okay, so let's decide, because I think the conversation, the more interesting part of this is, you're right, who do we insert from the Big 12, the ACC, the Pac-12, and does the Big 10 even get a seat at the table? Let's select just four teams, because that will make it, I think, with four conferences, power conferences for us to pull from, just eliminate four teams off the top of the SEC.
Should we only pull from power conferences? Because if you're asking me to choose four teams, it's going to be tough for me to not throw ECU into the mix to put into the SEC.
Here's what I'm going off of: longevity more than anything, not recency.
I mean, all right, that's fine. Yeah, ECU's been at it for like 5 years now, though.
ECU is really still good. They've still yet to go to Omaha, though. I want to base this primarily.
That's fair. Okay.
Our listeners can check us. If you got a problem, at CS Now Tweets is where to find the show handle and to, of course, interact with the show, however it may be. But here's the four teams that I would take off from the SEC. You tell me if you agree or disagree. Alabama, baseball, out of the SEC. Okay?
Yeah.
They're gone.
Yep.
Based on the way Auburn is performing this year, and they're right there at 2-13 overall, just behind Texas A&M in the SEC West, and LSU each at 4-11. There's more history with LSU and Texas A&M. I think more recent success. I'm going to have to push them ahead of Auburn. So I'm going to go with Alabama and Auburn out of the SEC West. We'll replace them with two teams in a moment from outside the SEC to improve upon this Super League. For the SEC East, Serbs, Missouri, no question.
Yeah.
Don't even belong, I think, geographically in this conference.
Broadcasters rejoice, too. Visiting broadcasters are like, thank God we don't have to go there anymore.
Yeah, Missouri, you're out of here. And then between, I mean, looking at the recent resurgence of Tennessee, it's hard to put them before Kentucky. So I think I'm going to go with the Wildcats, but you can also maybe argue Georgia.
No, not Georgia's
South
been to the
Carolina.
World Series. No, Georgia and South Carolina have both been to the World Series way too much. It's between
Carolina has two titles. I got
It's between Tennessee and Kentucky, and Tennessee has turned things around. Kentucky has somewhat turned things around, but, I mean, I think it's – But get rid
let's
of
go
them
with
both.
Kentucky.
Get rid of them both, honestly. Let's go with Kentucky since Tennessee's number two in the East right now.
All right, Kentucky, Missouri, Auburn, and Alabama. Your four teams eliminated from the SEC. So who do we insert? Here's my pick from the ACC. I'm going to go with Florida State.
Yes,
and there's no questioning. They have been to the NCAA tournament more times than anybody else in the ACC, 57 times. And what is it consecutively now in hosting a regional? I think it's approaching 50 straight years, so which is the longest active streak.
They didn't host They did not host a regional in 2019.
I misspoke. Not necessarily hosting, but making an NCAA tournament.
Making a regional. Yes.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah.
Making a regional.
That is an insane stat. That is similar to like the Bobby to another Florida State. That's like similar to the Bobby Bowden stat of like how many bowl games they went to until, you know, they missed one, what, his next to last year?
Maybe? Yeah, I think you're right on that.
But it was like 40 bowl games or something like that.
Yeah, Miami's at 46 NCAA tournament appearances. Clemson at 44. All three of those teams are among the top five nationally for most tournament appearances all time. But I'm going to take Florida State out of the ACC. Looking at the Big 12, I would go with Texas. And then I would argue that UCLA might be the best Pac-12 representative. But if you want to leave the Pac-12 out entirely, I'd be okay with that also.
Leave them out there on the West Coast. It's a different lifestyle. Honestly, we could do two super league. We could do like a East Coast and West Coast here, based on that. Like, I think the Pac-12, between the Pac-12 and like some of the smaller schools out on the West Coast, you could create a separate 14-team super league. I don't know if we want to get in the weeds and do that here. Maybe we stick to the SEC. But
I'm just trying to make the SEC better.
Yeah,
if that's possible.
I think between like all the smaller California universities and things like that, there's enough talent out west for them to have their own league. If you just get everyone to get, if you could make a league out of the Mountain West, Pac-12, and then any of those smaller schools like the Cal State, whomever's the Fullerton. I know they slipped back a little bit, but like, come on, they've been there. They're like Florida State almost every year. They've been there.
So Serbs, I actually would go with Miami as joining Florida State, two ACC teams that would join the SEC. Let's replace the two SEC Eastern Division teams right there in Kentucky and Missouri. Instead, go with Miami and Florida State. Make the SEC even more super than they already are as the Super League. And then for out of the West, in replacing Alabama and Auburn, I mean, Texas Tech, the recent success is there. You can go with Tech. I don't know if you got a Big Ten representative in mind. No. Or go ahead and throw a third ACC team in there because they've been to Omaha several times and are near the top of the ACC every season here of late, and that is Louisville.
Yeah, I'm going to just give an honorable mention to my Clemson Tigers, who've been very successful at baseball. Baseball, don't get it twisted, is the number two sport at Clemson. But the softball team has been bringing it more than the baseball team this year. Like, this is a bad year for Monty Lee. I don't know what happened. But typically, Clemson's right there, and I think they have more ACC tournament wins than anyone. ACC tournament championships than anyone does. I could be wrong. I mean, you can check that stat for me. But they're right up there towards the top. I know they have the most in football, but I think they have the most in baseball as well. And then also, I know as of late, they haven't been bringing it as much, but historically, UNC has to be like in the running if we're bringing an ACC school in, because they have been very good for a very long time. They were like the class of the ACC. So
that's fair.
But
for UNC, I might put them in over Louisville. But Louisville's Dan McDonald, Virginia, even their coach, Brian O'Connor, both of those guys are two of the leading active coaches in terms of winning percentage nationally. What Dan McDonald has done at Louisville and what Brian O'Connor has done at Virginia, each of those two deserves some recognition, at least if we're making a move to the SEC. But I think long-term, you're right. UNC, Clemson, despite as bad as their year has been. By the way, that's seven straight losses for your Clemson Tigers. Yeah. 15-18 Thank overall, you. 9-12 in the ACC. You know, they can garner some recognition. We agree on Florida State. I would go Miami. I can give you the benefit of the doubt on Clemson. That's three ACC teams. Where does the other team come from if we choose somebody outside the ACC to join this SEC Super League?
It's Texas. It's Texas. Okay. It's Texas all day long. For me,
right.
In my opinion. If I'm just thinking about like what are the schools I immediately identify with college baseball, Texas is probably the first one that comes to mind before anyone else. Like, I understand Vanderbilt's dominance as of late and the talent that they have, and they are the premier baseball program right now, in my opinion. But Texas, when I think college baseball, two things come to mind. The SEC and the Texas Longhorns. Those are the two things
no
I
doubt.
Think of. And my only big defense for maybe including Clemson is just the three, which is something they do already, which is the three-game series against South Carolina every year. That's a great series. I don't care. And then also Clemson has a historic rivalry with Georgia. They play every year as well. That's always a pretty good series, as noted by you with the walk-off winner the other night.
So Clemson and North Carolina may be interchangeable, but Florida State and Miami are into the SEC, as is Texas.
I think that's a no-brainer. And I think you might be on the right path with don't include Clemson and UNC and maybe make it Texas and Texas Tech in the West. But I just did think it was worthwhile. Clemson, while they have 10 ACC tournament championships in baseball, they only have two in the last 20 years. So I think that knocks them down a peg. It at least knocks them below Carolina in the pecking order. And I think Florida State is at the top for what you mentioned, 50 straight regional appearances, a half a century of regional appearances.
It's 47 or 48. It's something absurd, but
It would be 50 if not for COVID or if they'd have made a hire a year earlier. Like, it might as well be 50. That's a half a cent. Like, people have been like raised on Florida State baseball and then died of natural causes during this run.
57 appearances all time. That's second nationally. So as if the SEC couldn't get any more super than they already are. I got one more fun topic before we move to three up and three down. And by the way, Fairfield, number one rated team in terms of RPI, they're 22-0. Wait till I tell you how they got to 22-0 in a moment. I got a bone to pick with the team that they played this week in the doubleheader on Wednesday in St. Peter's, their MAC rival. But MLB The Show debuted, came out, the latest iteration of the game, MLB The Show 21. I saw Fox Sports rank some of the best video games. That was Ben Verlander, baseball video games all time. Serber, I'm curious, because you brought up MVP 06 NCAA baseball, which is phenomenal. They're in my top five regardless. I know they have to be in your top five as well, from the hitting challenge to the building a ballpark to the soundtrack in that game.
Yep.
The gameplay itself was phenomenal, and I could relate being in high school, being a baseball player, and playing that for hours on end after practice. They're in my top five. Here's the top five from Ben Verlander: MVP Baseball 05, number one, Backyard Baseball, number two, Major League Baseball featuring Ken Griffey Jr. for N64 is three, MVP NCAA Baseball 06 at four, and then MLB Slugfest 03. That's rated by Verlander of Fox Sports. He's a baseball analyst. What about you? What would be your top three, your top five?
Okay, I will just say about his top five. Of these, the only one I have not played is MLB Slugfest 03. Is that Sammy Sosa on the cover?
I think it's Sosa in a Rangers uniform, because that is in my top three. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. You've missed out with that one. Do you remember NFL Blitz, the arcade
style? So that's
game?
What this okay. is? Okay, got it. It's MLB version. I was going to say, I've only played Backyard Baseball like once or twice, but there was a football version, Backyard Football, and I always got Danny Marino to be my quarterback for that on the PC. MVP Baseball 05, I think, is going to be in my top five as well as MVP 06, NCAA Baseball. I got to say, I am an Xbox guy, and I wound up getting an Xbox Series X mainly. And the Ken Griffey baseball game also. I had that for Sega, I want to say. And that was an awesome game. But anyways, I was an Xbox guy. I've not been a PlayStation guy for a while, and I wound up getting the Xbox Series X because it was just what I could get on my hands on first, because it's been difficult to get the new generation of console. So I have The Show for the first time ever right now. It's the best baseball game I've ever played.
It's pretty good.
Oh, my God. It's not only the best baseball game I've ever played, it's the best sports video game I've ever played. Never have I like been so happy about going like 3-2 over a 5-game stretch. Like, it's not easy. It's super realistic. Like, the animations are good. I'm moving it straight to number one, and that might be recency bias. Number two, I'm putting MVP 06 NCAA Baseball. Number three, I'm going to put MVP Baseball 05. Number four, I'm not sure the year it is, but it's one of the triple play baseball games. And it's for one of the...
Is it with Mike Piazza on the cover?
I'm not sure. I have to
I think
look.
That was 2001. That would be my pick for the OG, the original PlayStation.
I need to look at
the 0-1
cover.
With Mike Piazza is my triple play.
Yeah, that's a great one. I think that might be the one. Triple play was a great baseball game series for several years until like maybe what the last three or four. I'm just seeing.
Yeah,
this.
I think MVP trumped him.
I'm seeing this pick of the home run contest inside a castle with all these bullseyes, and it's just bringing back memories. And if I'm filling out number five, I'm probably going to go, I have to check the year, MLB. I'm going to go with MLB 2K12, not because it's a great game, but because it was the last baseball game I had for quite a while, and I played it like with updated rosters for like 5 years until I finally gave up on it being a
so
thing.
The 2K,
or maybe
the
it was 2K
series.
It's 2K13. That was the last one. I correct myself.
The 2K series was pretty cool. It debuted on the Dreamcast system, which I had, I think, during 2000 or 01. It was the 2K with Pedro Martinez on the cover.
Yeah.
And the graphics of that game are beyond, are better than what you're seeing today, I would almost venture. It was ahead of its time by like 20 years. Now, the problem was you couldn't field. For some reason, the bozo that designed the game wouldn't allow you to field the baseball. So all you would do, like the computer would field it, and then you would make the throws.
Right.
You know, you'd be able to hit at the plate, but it would be auto-fielding. So as a guy who liked to dive for every play and increase the, you know, degree of difficulty as much as I can,
right.
You know, that did not jive well. And speaking of diving, that's my number one game on my list, just because if you're not diving or jumping to make an out, you're just not doing it right. And that's Ken Griffey Jr. Major League Baseball for Super Nintendo. I think it was the 94-95 game. Mm-hmm. Very animated, very arcade-ish, very minimal. You know, you don't have pitch selections or anything like that. It's how hard you're holding down the directional pad and the A or the B button and throwing the pitch that is going to increase the speed. And then if you're holding up, you know, you're going to throw a 50-mile-per-hour ball, and then you can go left and right to make a curve, you know, three or four times before it even gets to the plate. I mean, it's incredible. You can run over people in the baselines. Like, that thing is rad.
I have a specific memory of being probably too young to really understand all the intricacies of the game of baseball and not realizing that, hey, you know, in the seventh inning when you've given up seven runs, you probably need to pull your starting pitcher and bring in a reliever. But me being like 5 years old, I got Greg Maddux on the mound. So, and I'm like playing with my friend, and I just remember us getting into it, just a hysterical laughing fit because I hadn't taken my pitcher out and I threw like 60 balls in a row. And it's just the umpire saying, ball.
Yeah.
Ball.
Once you understand like baseball strategy, and you do get to that age where you understand, you know, when to pinch run, when to pinch it, when to pull a pitcher, when to start warming your guys in the bullpen too, and anticipating that, hey, this might be a rough stretch for them, or you might need to go to the left-hander, looking at matchups.
Maybe just a stretch and toss just to see if this guy can get out of it. You don't need to warm him up yet.
That is among, gosh, life's greatest video game passions, I think, is managing a baseball game appropriately, as realistically as you can, like you are the manager.
Yep.
And when those elements started to be introduced, I think in the late 90s, and it might be with my number two game that I have on my list, All-Star Baseball 1999. All-Star Baseball 99 for the N64 had Larry Walker on the cover. From a realism graphic standpoint, that was one of the first that just really nailed it. The hitting functionality, the fielding, the throwing, it was all amazing. I mean, it was exquisite. And you can run around forever and explore the ballparks, and it would never advance to the next hitter. Like, you had to stop pressing the controls for it to advance to the next hitter in the box. So I would just run, you know, past the pool on right center field back when it was Bank One Ballpark in Arizona, and I would just, you know, check out the pool. Just run laps back and forth around the right field fence. So that was number two. MLB Slugfest 03 with Sammy on the cover. That arcade NFL Blitz type video game was was a lot of fun, man. The on fire, you know, when you would get to that point to be able to hit four or five home runs in a game. I mean, it was really cool. MVP 06, NCAA baseball at four. And then I got to throw backyard baseball on there. Pete Wheeler, always had to draft him for speed. Pablo Sanchez, of course, for his power. And then, some of the pros, you know, I was always a big Griffey guy. He's still my favorite to this day. And even Ivan Pudge Rodriguez, another one of those selections for the PC, of course. There was another Ken Griffey Jr. game, Cerber. I think it was Winning Run for Super Nintendo, where if you didn't pitch Like, let's say you ran to the bathroom and didn't pause it. You'd come back and the umpire is turning around and tapping on the glass of your television saying, play the game, kid.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
There's little things like little. There was an innocence to video games when we were kids in the 90s where you could do silly stuff like that. If you did that now, like, could you imagine if you did that now, if you had the umpire like turn around on MLB The Show and be like, hey, throw the pitch. I think people would lose their mind. Like, it's so unrealistic. It's not like the real game. Like, people lose their minds over their sports games not being exactly like what they see on TV or in the stadium. It's amazing.
Takes away from the fun. You got to have a little bit of a imagination. And yeah. I think video games in the 90s, man, that was
undefeated.
You're harkening back. Yeah, you're harkening back to all that nostalgia of just being a kid. It was phenomenal. All right, we should probably talk some college baseball and
maybe
some games. So let's go three up and three down. And Cerber, Fairfield now 22-0. They make our three up list. The only undefeated team in all of the land. First road trip they took on Wednesday, so they've been playing all their games at home. We're 20-0, number one rated team in RPI. Entered the week number one nationally, team in ERA 1.96. Their WHIP at 0.87, number one. Fourth in batting average at 314. They've a lot of back-bats, 178 in batting average. So they go on the road to St. Peter's on Wednesday. They win game one of a doubleheader, 20-2, 17 hits. Game two doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. St. Peter's forfeits. Now, I've got additional information at the time of this recording. They only had 17 guys, I think, available to play. Three pitchers were on the COVID list, so a lot of COVID-related issues.
Yeah.
But St. Peter's, what are you doing, man? I mean, you've got an opportunity to play and to compete another day to suit up and go after and maybe deliver the first loss of the season to the Fairfield Stags, and instead you say no thanks. I don't know, man. I do not. I know player safety is a real thing, but why even play game one? You're playing game one only to forfeit the second one. I don't know when they notified Fairfield that game two was not going to happen. But you've got to do better. I can't believe game two did not happen because of a forfeit.
All right, so I'm curious, and this may be a big swing and a miss by me. Have you seen the television series Friday Night Lights?
Love it.
Okay.
Amazing.
Season four, coach has to go to East Dillon, right? They play their first game. He walks in at halftime and sees these dudes just beat all to hell, like bloody noses. People got like ice packs wrapped around their entire body, and he's like, and they're down like 56-0 or something at halftime. First game ever. The field is in terrible shape. He looks around. He's like, yeah, fucking way. There's the E for the episode. But he's like, no way. We're not playing. We got to forfeit second half. We can't play the second half. And, you know, half the town is like, that's embarrassing. Half the town's like, thank you for not getting my kid killed. Where do you stand on that? Because what I picture happening is the manager from St. Peter's walking into that locker room after that game one and just seeing his dudes just wiped out. They have just gotten their clock cleaned by an undefeated baseball team.
You're playing baseball, Cerber. You're not playing football.
I understand that. But perhaps he walked in and he said, you know what, y'all? It ain't worth it. Let's rest our arms.
I don't know.
Let's rest
these
arms.
I don't know
arms.
The timing.
I don't know, man. I don't want to defend them too much. Like, I'm towing the line of defending them because, honestly, play the game. If you've got the bodies, play the game. But
yes. It's why you play. You suited up. You played game one. If you weren't going to play the games and you were worried about your team and how many players you had available and your pitching staff, and you want to save yourself for the weekend, whatever excuse or reason that you want to use. And I thought about being careful, but I think St. Peter's deserves to be called out on this because this is the number one rated RPI team. You can say it's fraudulent. Sure, they play all their games at home. It's a Mid-Atlantic Athletic Conference schedule only.
Excuse
they haven't played
me?
Anyone. To this point, yes, they're playing only Mid-Atlantic Athletic Conference games.
The other MAC.
The other MAC.
MAC action.
MAC. Yeah. Okay. The Rick Pitino Mac, the Iona Mac. Yeah. And Fairfield rolls in first road test of the year. It's a doubleheader at St. Peter's at 20-0. They've won 21 consecutive games dating back to last year. Most wins to start a season ever. You're the Stags, you're feeling yourself, and you're on the road in a why is this not a hostile environment? How many fans were there for St. Peter's? What are their capacity limits? I don't know. They never should have played the first game if they knew they were just going to forfeit the second one, or if they got their feelings hurt in the way that they lost, 20-2, allowing 17 hits. I mean, come on, do better. You don't see Arkansas Pine Bluff not playing Arkansas. Okay, they lost 26-1, 27-1. Yeah. Now that followed a first game when they lost 12-4, so they thought they had a fighting chance in game two. But Serbs, just this week, Arkansas Pine Bluff went to Oklahoma State and got their, I'll use better language here. They got it handed to them, falling 28-0 in a 7-inning game. Like, at least play the game, see where you stand after 5-7 innings, and if you want to pull the plug. It's happening everywhere else around the country, but don't just not try to go out there and compete.
Yeah, this could be a larger discussion, but let's introduce the run rule outside of conference tournaments and the NCAA tournament. At a certain point, like 20-2, did you need to play the rest of that game? You know, at a certain point, can't you just shut that one down when it's 12-2, you know? So,
And given the circumstances of their available roster, St. Peter's, like, you can decide ahead of time. Like, hey, after five innings, you know, it's official game. If you guys are up 10, if you don't mind just, you know, moving on to game two, you know, we'll take a 30-minute break and then we're back at it.
Yeah, I think that's the play before. If they knew they weren't going to play the second game, if they said if we get it handed to us, we're not going to play the second game, they should have told Fairfield. Fairfield probably would have told them, no, never mind, we're not playing. You know, so I don't know, man. I'd be curious of like the extenuating circumstances. Did they have zero arms to throw? Did they use up the entire pen? Was there zero, or did they only have one arm? You know what I mean? Is it one of those things where it's like, well, we have one arm now to throw, and he's our Friday starter, and we ain't doing it? You know, so like, there are certain situations in which it's acceptable. If he goes to the other manager and he's like, look, man, I just don't have any pitching, and it's not going to do either one of us any good to go out here and play another 20-2 game. And maybe your third baseman breaks his ankle, you know, or somebody slides in at second and breaks a finger. You know, like, let's not derail your season for something that's not going to matter. But at the same time, if I'm a St. Peter's supporter, I'm like, what the hell, man? You know, this is our rival. We need to play. I want to see us play.
It's an undefeated team. Yes. So, I mean, the reward based on going out there and you know, exhausting it, you would think those guys in uniform want to give.
I see both sides of it, for sure.
Well, you with your Friday Night Lights comparison, good on you for that. I forgot about the East Dillon. And season four, you had it off the top of your head. So, good. I definitely can understand that perspective. Also, three up, South Alabama, first sweep of Louisiana since 2009. Raging Cajuns are the West Division leader. And they're tied for first are the Jaguars in the Sun Belt East. Softer per usual this league because Coastal Carolina is down. Georgia Southern is behind USA and leads the league in wins, though, with 9. They had an 8-game winning streak snapped as they lost the finale against Coastal Carolina this past weekend. Final team in three up, Serber. Third-ranked and fifth-ranked Texas, 31-8, 10-2, 14 straight wins for the Horns. They've yet to play the big boys, so the Big 12, though. That'll change this weekend with a visit to Stillwater. So their series wins have all come against, let's see, Baylor, Kansas, I think it was Oklahoma. And that top four, we've been talking about it every week. It's Texas, Texas Tech, TCU, Oklahoma State, TCU just sweeping Oklahoma State. So you know the Cowboys are going to come in with a little more urgency, given that they didn't even scratch across a win against TCU this weekend.
And they're hosting too, so they will. We were talking earlier about like how I kind of think of Texas when I think of college baseball. Oklahoma State, just like Georgia a couple weeks ago, was motivated to go into Vandy and knock off the top team in the land. Like, Oklahoma State's going to come in with that same fire. And, you know from actually having played some baseball throughout your lifetime that, like, a lot of baseball, a lot of sports in general, but a lot of baseball has to do with momentum. It is a streaky game. And sometimes all you need is just a little bit of extra motivation. And when the horns come to town, that's the extra motivation you need. That's going to be a very good series.
59 NCAA tournament appearances all time for Texas. That's number one among all programs. Florida State right behind them. Three down for this week. LSU at 22-14. I'm being a harsh grader, Serber, at 4-11 in the SEC. The Tigers just have to do better, man. They won game one last Thursday night against South Carolina before dropping the next two in a seven-inning doubleheader on Saturday. Friday was washed out due to rain. That concluded the series, including losing the rubber game, though, Serb. So you take game one. Phenomenal performance on Thursday night. I was locked into that one. Gavin Dugas put LSU on the board with a big monster two-run homer in the first inning, and Landon Marceau put together a great effort on the mound. He dazzled for, I think, seven innings, 12 strikeouts or so. It was a career high. But then to lose game two, 4-2, LSU 1-5 in games decided by two runs or less, by the way, and then just get smashed, no contest, not even keeping it close whatsoever at home against South Carolina, losing 9-0 in the rubber game. Like, come on, LSU. I thought they were turning the corner after a game one win. Instead, more of the same from the Tigers.
Yeah. How many teams is it 12 or 10 teams that make it to the SEC baseball tournament? It's 12, right?
Yeah.
They're getting dangerously close to not making the SEC tournament. And the stat that you brought up, 1-5 in games decided by two runs or less, does not bode well, because you need to be able to grind down the stretch. And they are on that line right now. If you're asking me who I'm going to put faith in between them and Texas A&M, it's the Aggies. So, and A&M's not having a great year, but you got to be able to grind late in the season. And if they're losing close games at that clip, they ain't got a shot. Shut it down.
And they're in
deservedly.
They're in trouble. Now. They're in trouble because they're going to 12th-ranked Ole Miss this weekend. That series starts tonight at 8:00 on ESPNU. The other SEC series, top-ranked Arkansas, 11th-ranked South Carolina, according to D1 Baseball, 9th in the Baseball America rankings. That's on SEC Network Thursday night starting at 7 o'clock. But, you know, Ole Miss has dropped the last three series, yet they're still a contender, you would think, to host and to potentially make it to Omaha. They've just hit one of the more tough, more difficult stretches in all of the country, having playing series against their rival Mississippi State last week at the Dude. Also, Arkansas dropping that series. And Florida, even before that, which was a Florida team coming off the series loss at South Carolina. So Ole Miss is coming off a stretch of three straight series losses. Now they're just licking their chops, happy to be back home at Swayze Field, and they got LSU coming in. So it could go from bad to worse for the Tigers, who typically are a great second-half team under Paul Maneri. They've done it before. They've won a College World Series coming on in the second half after poor starts. But it's an uphill battle, to say the least, for the Tigers this weekend. Okay, a bit of a history lesson for these next two in our three down serves. We can have some fun with this. Minnesota baseball. Maybe not on most people's radars, but when you look at the program under a microscope, the most successful program in the Big Ten over the last 40 years, and that's because of their skipper, John Anderson, who's in his 40th season overall. But the Golden Gophers, Serbs, are in the midst of their worst season ever with him at the helm. They're 4-20, Big Ten-only schedule, 1-9 on the road, 7 straight losses. They're only 3 years removed from 44-15, 18-4 on the season when they hosted a regional before losing to top-ranked Oregon State and eventual 2018 national champion in the Corvallis Super Regional. That season also included the 2018 Big Ten tournament title. By my count, Serbs, John Anderson in his 40 years, and let's say 38 completed seasons, not counting last year's COVID season, in 38 completed years, he's had only 6 seasons where he did not win 30 games. That's just incredible. And they've only got 4 to this point.
Yeah, you would imagine playing the Big Ten only schedule is a lot to do with that. You know, Minnesota typically would be able to go south for February and March, play some games on the road, play some neutral site games, get warmed up, and then jump straight into Big Ten play. But, you know, I think it's a tough ask for anybody who's doing conference-only baseball, just as it was to play conference-only football in the fall. It's a big ask to just be ready to go and play that play that many teams that are supposed to be competitive with you. And you know, clearly this is a down year for Minnesota. We talked about them a couple years ago. Or I guess we talked about them last year, actually, when we had a couple baseball episodes under our belt. As being like, you know, a team to watch to make it to Omaha. That's not the case this year. I'm not privy to all the roster changes that have happened. But, you know, when you have that much established success, you would hope that this is just a one-off and maybe, you know, that he's rebuilding the team. But it will be something, unfortunately, I hate to say this, but like when a coach gets that far up there in their tenure, we have to see if this is a trend or an anomaly come next season.
10 Big Ten tournament titles, all-time winningest coach in Big Ten history, all-time winningest coach in school history, second in wins among active D1 coaches at 1,325, 897, and three ties. Was the 10th youngest coach ever to 1,000 wins. John Anderson in his 40th year. It's been tough, to say the least. The Golden Gophers at 4-20 on the season. By the way, that 2018 team that lost to Oregon State, you remember that? Six straight elimination game wins for that Beaver squad on route to the College World Series title and deciding third game against Arkansas. Of course, Arkansas fans don't want to remember that. They were one out away from winning it in game two when you had that dropped ball or misplayed foul ball down the right side. The Beavers ended up winning that one. Final team, three down, Cerber Akron. This is tough, too, because this is a team that was just disbanded in 2015. Baseball was eliminated. So this is year two of their resurrection. They dealt with, what, only 12 games, I think it was, in the COVID-shortened year for them a year ago for the Zips. But they're 9-21 this season, 3-21 in conference play. In the MAC, the single-A MAC, 18 straight losses, 0-9 away from Akron. They got the MAC preseason favorite Central Michigan coming to Skills Field this weekend. If you're the Zips, man, and I drop this in the doc, we might have to tweet this out. Their head coach, Chris Sabo, his flat top, man, it's a damn spectacle.
This is a man that sells propane and propane accessories for a living. You hear me? It is awesome. Like, I'm pretty sure this guy goes to a military base and is like, give me a flat top. Like he looks like a drill instructor. It is perfect. Like perfect. There is not a stray, like the lines are so clean, dude.
So you say drill instructor, and my first thought when I saw this, by the way, there's more on Sabo. Like I have undersold this dude and what he was able to achieve as a professional baseball player. I'm actually excited for what he can do to Akron in a couple of more years. But, man, he's building from the ground floor, that's for sure. But you say drill sergeant. I thought of Lee Emery, man, from Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
he's got a little Full Metal Jacket in him. But his flat top, Sabo's the Akron head baseball coach, it's got more – oh, more loftiness to it, more height. It's a little more full. And yeah, and man, like you can put like a whole entire like stack of paper or file folders on this thing and he can walk down the hallway and not a single one would move. Like it's like a tray table, man. You could put drinks on his head.
I was gonna say it's like a beer hat without being a hat. Like he could just balance a beer up there, run one of those straws down and just kinda sip on it from time to time, and it would just sit perfectly in there. A bird could nest in this thing. Like, it is fun. It's thick. It's lined up. I mean, yeah, like, if baseball doesn't work out, I'm telling you, propane accessories. Call my man Hank Hill at Arlen Propane because you have a future, my friend.
If baseball doesn't work out, you're speaking, you throw some respect on the 1988 National League Rookie of the Year, Cerber. That's Chris Sabo for the Cincinnati Reds. Won the World Series in 1990.
I take it back. If this whole baseball coaching thing doesn't work out, propane accessories. Come on.
God, he was making $62,000, $62,500 in his rookie year. Rookie of the Year for the Reds,
wow,
in 1988. The year I was born. Ended up winning it all against the Athletics in 1990. Third baseman, for the Reds. Now the head coach of the Akron Zips in year two. Best of luck to Mr. Flat Top, Chris Sabo, for sure. Watchables for the weekend. Already mentioned it off the top. Fourth-ranked, second-ranked Mississippi State, and number two and third-ranked Vanderbilt going off the D1 in Baseball America rankings. 8 o'clock, and 2 o'clock, your Friday, Saturday, and Sunday starts. SEC Network on Friday, ESPNU on Saturday, SEC Network Plus on Sunday. This rivalry has really come to a head over the last couple of years, Serbs. The Bulldogs won an epic Super Regional in 2018. I think it was the year immediately preceding Vanderbilt's College World Series in 2019 when they had to beat Mississippi State twice, I think, in the SEC tournament. Even once in Omaha, Mississippi State had won 11 of 12, or they have won 11 of 12 overall coming into this weekend. They lead the all-time series 70-51, but since Tim Corbin's arrival, Serber, 30-14. This is going to be a dandy. Bulldogs and Commodores from Hawkins Field this weekend.
Yep, another top five matchup in the SEC. It's just something that we see week to week. That's an interesting stat on the all-time series with Corbin kind of turning it around. It's a real that turned it into a real rivalry because it was kind of a, you know, you do the math, it was a bit of a domination before Corbin arrived in Nashville. But well, these are always good. Somebody's gonna take two out of three though. Be interesting. Vandy would be my favorite because, I mean, they got gas on the mound.
Kumar Rocker returned to form last week. 7 innings, 2 hits. I think it was almost double-digit strikeouts. I can't remember the number off the top of my head. But Kumar in that environment in Knoxville, man, did you see the images from that one? Kumar talking to himself, yeah. Really embracing the Knoxville fans who are chanting overrated. They're chanting overrated for Jack Leiter on Saturday. They homered off of him twice. Vanderbilt actually led 4-2 in game two late in that one. Just a thrilling, fun series at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. And then you had the three home run performance by Tennessee and the way they were able to even up that series. Vanderbilt won going away with it on Sunday in game three. But, man, Tim Corbin said COVID did not exist in Knoxville last weekend. And it kind of gave me chills and goosebumps because it's like, okay, are we getting back to normal? Some places more than others. Like, I get it. But we talked about this last week on the heckling pod. You know, fans can change the game. Mm-hmm. And heckling was high in demand last weekend in Knoxville. And you wonder if that might translate what Tim Corbin said about a visiting environment. How might things be different, if at all, in Nashville this weekend with Mississippi State coming to town? We'll see. Other viewing options, third-ranked, fifth-ranked Texas and number 24 Oklahoma State, 8, 7, and 2 o'clock Friday through Sunday, ESPNU and ESPN Plus for the final two games of that series. First big test in the Big 12 for the Longhorns. UCLA at number 13, number 14 Oregon. The Pac-12, man, is become, in my eyes, one of the more fun league races. Now, these games, East Coast time, 9 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 3 o'clock on the stream, or do radio. Listen to UCLA or the Oregon Sports Network via the radio. Be old-fashioned like us, right? Digital audio. Let's reinvent this thing. Theater of mind. Baseball is built for the radio. But the Pac-12, Oregon State swept Cal 1 week after Oregon pulled the brooms out on the Beavers. And between them and Stanford and Arizona, and don't look now, but here comes UCLA. The Pac-12 is a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, it's wild up at the top. It seemed like in the past couple years it was UCLA and Oregon State running away with it. Not so this season. So interesting. I still don't watch a lot of Pac-12 baseball. Sorry to our What's Brewing podcast friends, but you know, it just it just means more here in the Southeast, folks. I'm not trying to be mean, but if you're telling me I got UCLA Oregon or I can go Texas Oklahoma State or I can go Mississippi State Vanderbilt, which Mississippi State Vanderbilt will be happening at the same time, no, actually, here's how you do your day. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
5 o'clock on Saturday, UCLA Oregon. 8 o'clock on Saturday, Mississippi State Vanderbilt. Congratulations. I've now told you how to spend 5 o'clock to midnight on your Saturday. Get it in ya. And if you want to, you can flip back and forth because the Texas Oklahoma, actually ESPN Plus, Texas Oklahoma State, have that on your cell phone. Do the double screen.
Yes.
Do it to it, my friends.
That's why we have them on. Michael Serber right there telling you exactly how to spend your Saturday with college baseball. And, yeah, that 5 o'clock East Coast start time is ideal. It'll allow you to take in a lot of the other action around the country. More on that Pac-12 line of demarcation, if you will, though. I mean, Oregon State, impressive after they were swept by Oregon to then sweep Cal. So OSU is back in first place of the Pac-12. Stanford guts out a road series at Arizona State after losing game one to remain in second place. And really, Arizona State should have took game two in Tempe. Stanford may lose some ground, though, this weekend. There's COVID issues in Palo Alto. Their series with Washington is off. And like the Cardinal, Oregon rallies during the series versus USC. And Arizona overcomes the game one defeat to Wazoo and the Palouse to keep pace. UCLA, that sweep of Utah last weekend, that's six in a row for the Bruins now. Six in a row. They swept Utah, scoring an absurd 42 runs to five across the three games. You know what's significant about 42, Serber?
Oh, I have an idea. There was a pretty good baseball player with the number 42.
Jackie Robinson. And that was the weekend where UCLA donned 42 on their hats, on their uniforms, to commemorate the life of Jackie Robinson. So they scored 42 runs in the three-game sweep of Utah. First series win of the season, 9-6, only one game back of the conference-leading Oregon State Beavers. So it's congested there in the Pac-12 at the top. Six straight wins. They beat Pepperdine in the midweek. 6-0 in the midweek now are the Bruins, coming off their first ever series win over Utah. And they go to Eugene this weekend. Giddy up, Serbs. You're going to be all in. I know 5 o'clock comes Saturday, at least for game two. And hey, if you want to wet the palate a little bit early, a little Pac-12 after dark, Friday night, 9 p.m. Find the stream. Get your radio nearby. UCLA and Oregon. Let's go.
Let's go, baby.
Final series, keep an eye on number 20, Old Dominion, 27-7, 13-3 in Conference USA, and number 19, Charlotte, the 49ers. Let's see, what do I got as their record? Here we go. Charlotte, 26-10, 14-2 in league play.
I have a quick Charlotte 49ers baseball story, and it has very little to do with baseball. So it's very on brand for me. And forgive me while I vamp. I'm going to look up the guy's name. But Georgia was playing Charlotte at the Knights baseball park in downtown Charlotte. It's basically across the street from where the Panthers play football, and it's where the Knights of the AAA affiliate, help me here, for it's not the White Sox, is it?
It is the White Sox.
It is the White Sox. Okay. Yep. You were leaving me hanging there because I know our Dash team, they're a single-A affiliate for the White Sox, but yeah, Knights are AAA affiliate for the White Sox. Anyways, they were doing this, like, hey, y'all come out to the ballpark because we've got this personal appearance happening. Who, you may ask, was the personal appearance by? It was the principal from Saved by the Bell. He was just going to be at the ballpark doing a meet and greet. Mr. Belding. Who played Mr. Belding?
Dennis Haskins?
Dennis Haskins. He was going to be making an appearance at the Charlotte Knights baseball park, and they were advertising for it hard. That's just a little, and that is just the most minor league baseball thing that there is. Like, we need a promo night.
Who cares about Dennis Haskins?
Yeah. We got a good kick out of it on the Georgia broadcast that they were just like, they were blowing it up for Dennis Haskins being there. Like, you would have thought that the president was coming to the game.
6:00 doubleheader start on Saturday, 2:00 series finale on Sunday. Conference USA again, 4-game series, all on CUSA TV. Good luck finding that. But it's the first of 8 games on Friday between those two as they play back-to-back weekends at Charlotte this weekend, at Old Dominion in Norfolk, Virginia the following weekend. The Haskins things reminds me of when I was a news anchor reporter fresh out of school. Eddie Munster from the Munsters, mm-hmm, was doing an Amtrak tour on the Amtrak train, which is real big where I'm from, especially going from school and back home. Like, you know, you cut a 3.5-hour car ride down to it's still like 3 hours, but, you know, $19 one way there and back if you call ahead. So Amtrak's pretty cool, right? But he's doing an Amtrak tour. He's just riding a train, and he wants you to come speak to him so he can just feel the publicity again, feel young again, and just show off a couple of lines and for you to take pictures. Like, I don't think there was anything relevant about Eddie Munster at that time. He didn't write a book. He didn't have an album. None of those things. It was just, hey, Eddie Munster is on a train. Come and see me. He's stopping in your town today.
It's just, it's the kid, too. It's not even, like, the main character. And it's not the dad, right?
Yeah, he's a grown, man.
It's the grown man who played a, he played a kid on TV 60 years ago. And he's like, I got to keep capitalizing on this. This guy signs a lot of autographs and makes, you know, we're making fun, but let's be real. Like, for some of these guys, you know, they're character actors on TV. And then when the TV show's gone, there's like, well, no one will hire me because they only see me as this. Like, well, I'm going to start making money on appearance fees. And really what this shows is that companies will pay just about anybody anything if, like, 10 people know who they are.
It's embarrassing in my mind, but whatever. Whatever you got to do to stay top of mind in the news cycle, your washed up, you know, child acting career, you want to go around, ride a train, and take photos and sign autographs. Cool, you know, that's your thing. Whatever. Cool story, bro. Other nugget that I wanted to at least riff on quickly, ninth-ranked ECU, they returned to action at home against UCF. Serbs, they flew to Houston last week only, you know, to take BP, warm up, and then that series to be canceled. Didn't even play because of COVID-related issues in the Houston program. COVID is wreaking havoc this weekend because 16th-ranked Pitt and number 7, 4th-ranked Louisville aren't going to play. The Cards have won the 112th Battle of the Bluegrass contest Tuesday against Kentucky, dropped the opener of Virginia in 10 innings before winning 2. Pitt, meanwhile, tied with Georgia Tech for 2nd in the Coastal. Georgia Tech took 2 of 3 from Virginia Tech in Blacksburg this past weekend, so the Yellow Jackets still hanging around in the ACC Coastal. Pitt and Georgia Tech a game behind VT. They won 2 of 3, had Pittsburgh against UNC last weekend, but because of COVID-related issues in the Pitt program, we won't get to see the Panthers and the Cardinals. Would have been a top 15, top 20 showdown. Again, Louisville right there, you know, could have went a long way in terms of sorting out the ACC picture, the hosting picture, for an NCAA regional in Louisville right there at the doorstep. Sad to see we won't get to see Pitt or Louisville. And I don't know how you can't make these games up, right, Serbs? There's no way.
No, unless you do it in like the maniacal tournament format of the ACC tournament. If you're just like, hey, you know, we got an extra day. No one knows what's going on anyway. Let's just throw a couple teams out there and have them make up a few games. Like, it's such a tournament.
That would be so brand and within the culture of the ACC tournament with the pod system and the way they do that in Charlotte this year, to just have Pittsburgh and Louisville come 2-3 days down before, or maybe 5 if you're able to, you know, waste all your arms, you know, play 2 games maybe to decide one spot in the divisional standings. That would be be very on brand.
The most ACC thing is just like bring them down there 2 or 3 days early, have them play a 3-game series to make up for it. All right, you're like, all right. Best 2 out of 3, you guys make the next round, and then you just don't let them in, you know, just for no reason. You're just like, actually, nah, the games didn't matter.
Kind of like what they did with football this year in axing a couple of games late, which, remind me, did that hurt Clemson or benefit Clemson? Didn't Dabo stick his nose up on that because Notre Dame was getting in or you know, not having to play a certain game where they just got fast-tracked to the ACC title game? How'd that go down again football-wise? Do you remember?
What I remember is that Dabo basically was like, what the hell, Florida State? We want to play. And Florida State was like, we don't want to lose 56-0. If I'm remembering correctly, like Notre Dame got like a, they just got to like a bye. They got a bye when they were supposed to be playing a game, and they got an extra week before the championship game or something like that.
Yeah, which they wouldn't have had. They wouldn't have had before. They were going to play Wake Forest in a rescheduled game.
It didn't matter anyway, right? Like it wound up not mattering. Clemson still won the ACC, so like whatever. I'm so ready for this season to be in the rear view, because after this season is in the rear view, everyone will be vaccinated in a D1 college sports program, and we can get back to playing, you know, full seasons of football, basketball, and baseball.
Georgia, Clemson, September 4th, Charlotte, Bank of America Stadium. Put it in my veins.
I'm not allowed. We're not typically allowed to go to games because we have important stuff to handle to get these broadcasts off the ground at our day job, and we're not like BSing about baseball and on this podcast, like
talking video games and Super Bowls.
Yeah, like, you know, normally we're having to like do like real stuff on game day, but I'm gonna do whatever it takes. I'm gonna try anyways to try and be at that game because, oh baby, I was there for I wasn't there for Deshaun's first game down in Athens, but I was there the year before when Clemson and Georgia had a top 10 showdown to open up the season in Death Valley. It was Taj Boyd's senior season. And that was just, I get goosebumps thinking about it. It's the most electric atmosphere I've ever been around. Cause people forget that Clemson and Georgia, you know, 60 miles as the crow flies from one another down I-85. They are very close and they used to play each other every single year in football. And, the fan bases are equally dumb. So it really hits different. Yeah.
Yeah. 60 miles. I think a lot of people are not aware of that for sure. Okay. Before we get out of here, give me a hat tip. Frame this for us. Jeff Haxton, radio play-by-play voice for Texas Tech baseball, series at West Virginia. Red Raiders took 2 of 3 from the Mountaineers this past weekend. He's gone viral, man. Whether it's our company accounts, ESPN, NCAA on Twitter, you're going to see this floating around. Jeff Haxton, foul ball, press box. Go ahead and give us a little sliver of theater of mind, Serbs, for what Haxton was able to pull off. Hat tip to Mr. Hax this weekend.
So he's calling the game. He says, this one's coming right back at us. And, like, as he says it, like, you know in Star Wars when, like, the lightsaber is on the other side of the spaceship? Or, you know what I mean? It's, like, it's far away. And it's dire. And they use the force to grab like the lightsaber, and the lightsaber just shoots into their hand. It looked like Hax uses like the force. He like goes into Darth Vader mode, and he's just like, ball will come directly to my hand. It's not even like Hax gesticulated wildly. He literally just sticks his arm out, and exactly where he sticks his arm out, the ball. It doesn't look real. It's so amazing. It doesn't look real. It looks like it was set up, like it's fake.
Along with a flat top photo of Chris Sabo, head coach for Akron, 1990 World Series champion of the Cincinnati Reds, 1988 Rookie of the Year for the Reds. We will repost at CS Now tweets the video of Jeff Haxton catching this foul ball, which was just incredible. I was most impressed by the frame job of it as well. But you're right, it was like he knew it was coming, and he stopped it from piercing his chest directly. And people rose a glass to him in the crowd. He was excited for that. Made me kind of thirsty as well. He deserved it. The moment was his. Jeff Haxton with one more incredible press box grabs that you'll ever see as that ball was coming straight for his chest. It was phenomenal for sure. At Learfield Audio, at CS Now tweets, you can find that video. It's starting to circulate as well. I got a notification on ESPN just before we started recording today. Prediction for the Arkansas-USC series. I teased this at the start. Serber, this will be the first time that top-ranked Arkansas drops a series this year. They will lose 2 out of 3 to South Carolina this weekend in Columbia. Who is upping capacity limits at Founders Park? They must have been listening to our heckling podcast last week when they had issues with that in a series against Missouri or 2 weeks ago, but we covered it on last week's pod. There will be more fans in the stands. I expect heckling to be appropriately calibrated for those on the Gamecock side, and it's going to be a fun one. I expect Arkansas, though, to get tripped up, much like Vanderbilt did against Georgia a couple of weeks ago. I think the Hogs are due to catch a couple of L's, and I think the Gamecocks are the team that is cut out to provide those.
Yep, Carolina's back, man, and look out because, it's only been a couple of years. They had a couple down years, but like South Carolina was the class of the SEC for a very long time, and they are not to be messed with. So it'll be a good series. I think there'll be 3 close games, but I'm going to side with you. I think the home field is the advantage for the Chickens, and they take 2 out of 3 against the Hogs.
Mark Kingston has that ship going in the right direction. That's for sure. Gamecocks and Hogs coming up. The series will begin on Thursday night, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 7 o'clock start, SEC Network. Top-ranked Hogs, 9th-ranked, 11th-rated South Carolina Gamecocks. He's Michael Serber on Twitter at L_Serberino. I'm Kyle Schassberger at Kyle Schass. Another fun episode, my guy. We'll talk again next week. Until then, bye.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on Auto Trader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on Auto Trader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.